Here we go.
From the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Well, fortunately, the opinions of Fred and A.J. are not necessarily those of Gal Media, but they're also not here. They are chilling somewhere, enjoying the hot weather, living the high life. I'm Patrick Creighton, in for Fred and AJ today on The Blitz. However, I'm not alone. No, they were kind enough to force Jong to stay with me. So poor Jong has to do the show with me today, although he might get a reprieve later on. This is the first time that I'm actually getting to see Jong since his wedding. Jong is now the master of the married life. He is now officially married to an absolutely beautiful woman, so I don't know how many drugs he feeds her, but now I can officially say congratulations to Mr. Lee that he is a married man with a beautiful wife, and somehow he is still standing.
Thank you, and I drop a little Ambien in her water before she goes to sleep.
That were hey, listen, I'm not, but you know, it's not like you're Bill Cosby and her. So, if whatever works for you is what makes a happy couple, and I'm all about that. Maybe I should try that. Maybe I'll have more luck.
I want to thank you for coming to the wedding and for and I don't know how this happened, but majority of your table decided not to show up. A couple of them said they can't make it a couple days before the wedding, and one said he was coming. He told me he was coming over and over again, and didn't show up on Saturday. So,
do you want me to like place a well placed phone call to some friends in Brooklyn and have that taken care of?
No, you're good.
Because we can take care of that.
Yeah, and then it turned out Nate left early, and then it was just you and your wife, your beautiful wife, that were at the table by yourselves.
It was. And at that point, Fred was kind enough to say, hey, why don't you guys join our table since there's only two of you and we have two people. We still have two seats. Then he also realized, oh, wait, you guys have a full unopened bottle of Remy. Bring that too.
I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, we did. We had a great time. And I think everybody who was there had a great time. I know everybody that was at both tables that I eventually was a part of had a great time. The food was amazing. You know, usually every wedding that I'd ever been to, normally, you know, you get like, okay, you have your choice of, say, like chicken, prime rib, or fish. No, none of that. Jong decides we're going to have everything on the menu. There's shrimp, there's lobster, there's steak. You name it. It was on the menu, and it just kept coming in waves. It was like a 9-course meal. This was like the biggest wedding meal that I've ever seen. And for those of you who know me or have seen me, you know I can handle a 9-course meal. Let's just be real about that. It was a terrific time, and again, congratulations to you, to your lovely wife, to your family. I hope that you guys have another 80 years of very happy life together.
Thank you.
People who are not having happy lives together right now are probably fans of the Astros because, well, they followed up their 13-3 stretch with a 3-6. We know that in this part of town here, the expectations for the Astros basically are that they never lose. And somehow they're supposed to find a way to win every game. They're supposed to win every game 10-0. And that's just not realistic for any team ever. But that's what, honestly, I feel like that's what the expectation is for the Astros. Like, how dare they freaking lose? And, you know, I tell you what, I want to be in a position where I'm playing 600 ball and I have the best run differential in all of Major League Baseball. And the only thing my fans are concerned about is everything that is wrong with my team. It's like a blessing and a curse to be as good as the Astros are, even though they haven't really, like that 13-3 stretch is the only hot stretch that they've had so far through the first 2 months of the year. They'll have three more stretches like that. They're 13 games over 500. here if we get into officially the first week of June. And that's not to say there aren't issues with the Astros. There are a few issues with the Astros. There are some guys who are not hitting anywhere near as well as they did last year. And look, we said that was a possibility. The guys were going to regress to the mean. Now, I don't think it was realistic to expect Marwin Gonzalez to be as good as he was last year. You just didn't expect him to fall off so hard. You didn't expect Derek Fisher and Jake Marisnyk to strike out every other time they came to the plate. You know, you expected the bottom of the lineup to be a little better than it's been. Okay, a lot better than it's been. Just stop striking out so damn much. You know, and they brought up Tony Kemp and they brought up J.D. Davis, so they've tried to inject a little bit more into that to get those guys. They're going to have to be without Brian McCann for a little bit. That's going to hurt them because everybody loves throwing to Brian McCann. And even though McCann will never hit for a big average, he gets on base a lot, and he's got power. But the biggest issue with the Houston Astros is the same thing that was the biggest issue with the Houston Astros last year, and that's the bullpen. And now that we're into June, you know, you would expect by now that the Astros would have a clear, you know, order in the bullpen. Everybody would have a defined role. Guys would know what they are. Everybody would have a straight order in the bullpen, and it would start to click. But here we are on what is now the 4th of June, and I don't think the Astros have an order in their bullpen. And over this 3-6 stretch, we have seen examples of how there is no order in the bullpen. And I'm tired of, AJ's trying to see, you know, roll for this guy, roll for that guy. Horse bleep. We're 2 months into the season. We're past experimentation. If we're in June and guys don't have defined roles to the point where they are comfortable with said defined roles and they're obvious, that's on the manager. Just this 9-game stretch, and it all starts in the back of the pen, okay? Everything starts in the back of the pen. Because you start with your closer and then you work your way down the pen. So everything starts in the back of the pen, and that's Ken Giles. And for all the grief that people want to throw out there about Ken Giles and why they don't like Ken Giles and all the other things, here's the bottom line. He's the best you got. So you better get him right. And in the last 9 games, Ken Giles has made 4 appearances, and 3 of them have been non-save situations. 3 out of 4 appearances in 9 games are non-save situations. That's on the manager. In fact, there was a save situation that he was not available for because he'd pitched back-to-back days in non-save situations. You basically wasted him. And there are too many times guys are just being wasted. They're throwing unnecessary innings. You're carrying 13 freaking pitchers because you didn't want to lose Peacock and you didn't want to lose McHugh. And because you're paying Tony Sipp $6 million. You didn't want to lose the 2 guys who are going to have to fill in your rotation when Dallas Keuchel or Lance McCullers or Charlie Morton inevitably get hurt because those things are going to happen. But the usage of the pen continues to make me scratch my head because you have 3 guys in your pen who can give you length, but you only use 1 of them in that purpose. You have a guy who's supposed to be your designated closer, but you keep bringing him in non-save situations. Then you get a save situation and you can't use him. Because you used them the last 2 days. You don't want to use them a 3rd day in a row. What happens? Blows a save. You know, all we have to do is literally go back 1 week. That 14-inning debacle. Where they had, what, a 7-3 lead? 8-3 lead? 4-5 run lead? The 9th inning? And Chris Devinsky threw 9 pitches in the 8th inning. Non-save situation. Just leave Devo in there. Let him pitch. He threw 9 freaking pitches. You know, it's not always about how many innings did he throw, but how many stress innings did he throw. If you go 1, 2, 3 in 9 innings, It's barely an inning. He could have gone the ninth inning, no problem. Instead, he goes to Giles in an unsafe situation. We know this is a bad idea with closers. We've got 30 years of history that says don't go to your closer in a non-safe situation. They can't ramp it up. These are guys that live on adrenaline. They live on the moment. They live on the pressure. No pressure, no moment, no stuff. So he leaves Giles in. He gives up three hits and then yanks him. Goes to Harris, who goes 1-2, hit. 0-2, hit. Brings in Rondon. 0-2, hit. 0-2, hit. They wound up burning through Devo, Giles, Harris, Rondon, Smith, McHugh, and Peacock. You burned seven relievers in a game that you should have been out of in the ninth inning instead of the 14th with two pitchers. And that then had a carryover effect. Because the very next day after the bad loss, the very next day they wanted to make sure, we got to make sure we get this win. So in a 5-1 game, you're going to Devo in the eighth and Giles in the ninth. There was no need to go to Giles in the ninth. And the idea of, oh, well, AJ is trying to get him back out there, back on the horse, you know, after the bag. No, we've already seen AJ does not care when it comes to getting Giles right back out there the next day after a bad game. See the punch in the face game. You remember the punch in the face game? Giles didn't pitch for a freaking week. So we know that's not the case. Okay, the very next day, where you had the save situation, you had Sipp come in for one batter in the seventh, Joe Smith finishes the seventh, Rondon finishes the eighth, and then save situation, Ken Giles, oh, not available because he pitched the last 2 days in non-save situations. But they went to Devo for the third straight game, and he gives up a two-run home and a tie the game. And then Peacock in the 10th takes the L, giving up a home run. The order in the pen is a disaster. And until that's straightened out, just the order, guys will never pitch consistently. Your guys will not pitch to the best of their ability. Tried and true, we know this. Every relief pitcher will tell you. They have to have an order. Guys need to find roles. That's on AJ. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Fred and AJ. It's the Blitz.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry. Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
I'm Patrick Creighton in for Fred and A.J. on The Blitz. John Lee on the side of the glass on the ones, twos, and threes. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We're on the Astros right now, and specifically the Astros bullpen. You can also get us on Twitter. At P. Creighton 1, at ESPN 97.5, and at Jon Snow, but with a zero in the snow, right?
You are correct.
Oh, look at that. With a zero in the snow, you can hit us up on the Twitter as well. You know, the Astros bullpen, I know that Seattle was able to pull off a deal with Tampa. That was a really early deal. Most of the time, it's going to be tough to pull off a deal for an impact player at this time of the season. Teams want to, if you're a designated seller, you're trying to hold out through the deadline because it maximizes, or at least teams believe it maximizes, the return that they can get for their player. You know, you're talking about teams that aren't very good, that may have a really good closer at the back of their pen, who would be open to moving said player. And right now, there is one bad team that is in desperate need of minor league talent who would potentially be available, and that's Kelvin Herrera of the Royals. And Herrera has, you know, vaulted himself into the upper echelon of closers, like Craig Kimbrel level closer. He's making, I want to say he's making about $8 million this year, and he's a free agent at the end of the year. So because of the fact that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, you'd say, okay, well, that'll hold the price down. Not going to hold the price down. That he's an elite closer on a team that is desperate to rebuild its minor league system. Look at the Royals the way you looked at the Astros in 2013. They don't have a lot of talent at the major league level. The two guys, you know, Herrera and Mike Moustakas, those guys are both going to be on the way out. In fact, I would say both of them would be fits on the Astros because Moustakas would bring stability to the DH position as well as give you an option, you know, at first base should you need it. Doesn't hurt, but that's a legit bat at your DH position, and Herrera is a top three closer. The Royals have a bereft farm system. The Astros have a ton of minor leaguers. So this is where you're going to get that debate of how much are you willing to pay just to get the best guys available to chase that back-to-back ring. Because the Astros are in a position to get a back-to-back ring, to me, this is a no-brainer. Whatever it is, go for it. Oh, well, you're giving up too much minor league talent. You never know if that minor league talent is going to pan out, and then you never know how long they're going to stay healthy for. What you do know is that ring is going to look real nice and shiny next to the other ring. But if the price winds up being too high, there's not a lot of other options out there right now because it's still early and there's still a lot of teams that are bunched up. You're trying to find teams that are falling out and look at themselves as sellers early. The only two potential other arms that would make a difference in the Astros bullpen that you think might be available, you know, the Mets are falling apart. Injuries are, as usual, ripping the Mets apart. And Gerasimilia has returned to 2015 form. He's making $8 million this year. Then he's a free agent. He's likely a cheaper acquisition than Herrera. He's the guy who's got World Series experience. Gerasimilia might be a guy you'd call up the Mets and say, is he available? Other than that, you know, Brad Hand in San Diego, I don't know that the Padres would deal Hand because they've got him under contract for the next 3 years, basically, and he's cheap. Brad Hand makes $3.5 million this year, $6.5 million in 19, $7 million in 2020, and he's got a $10 million club option for 21. That is three more years of team control for a terrific closer. I don't know that they're going to part with that guy yet. Even though the Padres stink, he's cheap. There's no need to deal him. Whereas the Royals and the Mets, they'd have to pony up eight figures to keep their guys. And you don't need to have a $15 million closer on a bad baseball team. That's just a waste of money. But realistically, those guys aren't going to be available till we get into July. There's a whole nother, you know, I mean, you're talking about 6 weeks before those discussions really heat up. You got to get the guys you have right. You can't just, it's not fantasy baseball. You can't just swap guys in and out. You got to take the guys you have. You got to get them right. And the way you get them right is to make sure everybody knows exactly what their job is. Does anybody know what Brad Peacock's role is? Because Brad Peacock pitches all over the damn place. Not to mention, he pitches way too much. If Brad Peacock is supposed to be a guy who can give you length, why does he always go one inning? You know, and you think about it, over this nine-game stretch, here's the deal. Colin McHugh has thrown 7 2/3 innings over this 9-game stretch, far and away the most. After that, Devo's gone 4 innings because in one appearance he went 2 innings. Then Joe Smith has pitched 3 2/3. Everybody else has pitched 3 innings exactly. Sipp, Harris, Rondon, Peacock, and Giles. It looks like there's too much. I got to make sure everybody gets an inning. No, you don't. You need to make sure you're using guys in the situations they are best equated for. Believe it or not, Tony Sipp's given up 1 hit in his 3 innings. I know it's shocking. Harris has been awful. He's given up 5 runs. Devo gave up a 2-run homer in his 4 innings, otherwise he's been good. Joe Smith has not given up an earned run in his 3 2/3, 5 appearances. I'm not sure what the issue is with Rondon, but they seem to like to go to him for 1 out here and 2 outs there. Peacock's given up 3 earned. He's taken 2 losses. It seems like every time Peacock gives up a run, it's a walk-off. He's taken 2 losses, and they both, you know, were walk-off scenarios. You know, why is it such a reach to say Brad Peacock is not a closer? I don't have a problem with that. Brad Peacock's not a closer. And why he's got to go 1 inning all the time. Giles has pitched 3 innings. He's gotten banged around, both in non-save situations. And like I said, you know, you're wasting him in these non-save situations that when you needed him against the Yankees, you didn't have him. You went to Devo 3rd day in a row when he gave up a 2-run homer. I mean, the reason you didn't want to go to Giles was 3rd day in a row, so you went to Devo 3rd day in a row. You've got 8 relievers. Why are you going to the same guy 3 games in a row? There's just certain things. It just doesn't make sense. You know, on the game that Keuchel got beat up, Colin McHugh went the final 3 innings of that game. That's exactly the role that Colin McHugh should be in. You know what? Not a save situation, whether you're up 5, down 5, whatever it is. You've got a guy who can give you length. Let him give you length so you don't burn the rest of the pen. You know, 2 days later, you know, Gerrit Cole gives you 7 strong innings, and you go Devo to the 8th, and then Peacock to the 9th. Why did you have to bring in Peacock? You could have just let Devo pitch the 2 innings. And then you could have let Peacock pitch the next day when you needed somebody to pitch. All these wasted appearances by guys, we just got to give him an inning. No, every time you do that, it bites you in the butt the next day. Guys will be ready if they don't pitch for 3 days. Maybe they get a little more giddy up on the heat. But every time you're just, I just got to give a guy an inning in the, you know, in a role that doesn't seem to equate, it always bites them, that game and the next game. The bullpen is a wreck, and that's on A.J. Hinch. Every button he touched last year worked. Every button he touches this year with the bullpen is like a nuclear disaster. He's got to get that straightened out. So what do you guys want to do with the pen? We'll give you a chance to tell us. 713-780-3776. Is this on AJ, or do they need to make a move? Because again, remember, you say they need to make a move. It's a 6-week timeline. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Fred and AJ. It's the Blitz.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
Listen to your favorite ESPN 97.5 show on the go with the ESPN 97.5 app for iOS or Android. Presented by Saltgrass Steakhouse. Now back to the Blitz with Fred and AJ.
Patch Creighton in for Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman, who are chilling today, the day off. John Lee on the other side of the glass on the ones, twos, and threes. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. How do you fix the Astros? I mean, it's not like they're broken. Except they're 13 games over 500, they're playing 600 ball. They're not broken. But the expectation here isn't, you know, finish in first place. The expectation here is win back-to-back rings. And so we're 2 months into the season. We've gotten an idea of who we expect to be better as the season goes on and where we have very little patience. So how do you want to fix the Houston Astros? Certainly the rotation is perfectly fine. It's the bullpen, and maybe it's a couple of spots in the lineup. You want to fix them from within. You want to be a little more patient. You want to go out and get somebody. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Now, Astros off tonight. They'll have a quick two-game set with the Mariners at Minute Maid beginning tomorrow before they hit the road for 10 straight in Arlington, in Oakland, in KC. This series here against Seattle will be DK against James Paxton tomorrow, and then Lance McCullers Jr. and Wade LeBlanc on Wednesday before they head to take on the Arlington Strangers, four-game set. And the Mariners right now, despite the fact that they've lost Robbie Cano for 80 games, they are a game up on the Astros. Even in the win column, two in the loss, so it's two games in hand. These are two games the Astros, in their own building, need to win. You know, when the Astros win, generally, look, they win. The Mariners, you can make a case they're kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors. If you are 15 games over 500 and your run differential is 17, there's a lot of luck involved in that. You don't usually win that many close games. And they're pretty even between home and road. Their home record, road record, very similar. But they don't score the way the Astros score. And they give up a lot more runs than the Astros usually tend to give up. But that being said, they're still where they are. And the Astros need to... Look, these are two games the Astros need to win. I'm not calling them must wins, because it's not a must win on June 4th, unless you're 10 games under and you're striving to get back into the race. It's not a must win, but these are two games the Astros should win and kind of reassert themselves as, hey, this is our division. Give the Mariners a reminder of who's king of the yard. There's nothing wrong with that. Like I said, this 3-6 stretch here by the Astros doesn't feel as bad, doesn't hurt as much if the very first thing you do is take two in a row from the Mariners and then go up to Arlington and kick the Rangers' ass a little bit. Or a lot of it. There's never anything wrong with beating the hell out of the Rangers, who, by the way, are 12 games under 500, can't score, and have a negative 70 run differential, which means they're giving it up like crazy. They also stink in their own building. Yeah, Arlington is it's a homer haven, and they stink in their own building. They're 11-19 at home. Beat up Seattle in your own park, then go to Texas and kick their ass. Then you go to Oakland. Oakland's not that good. Then you go to Kansas City. They stink. They're even worse than the Rangers. This should be a get fat time. You know, and for all the, the Astros are only 8-10 against, you know, some of the better teams. You play 500 against the best teams and you beat the hell out of the bad teams. Recipe for success in Major League Baseball since its advent. You went seven games with the Dodgers. Could have gone either way. You went seven games to the Yankees. Could have gone either way. Last year, it went the Astros' way. Another year, maybe it doesn't. But, you know, the better teams, the really good teams, the Astros, the Yanks, the Red Sox, they're going to beat each other up when they play each other. And then they're going to smoke the Orioles and they're going to smoke the Jays. Well, that's, you know, look, this is what the Astros need to do here. Get two against the Mariners, who are, you know, right there with you at the top of the division. Kind of retake your spot atop the West. And then beat the hell out of three bad teams. Padding your stats. Whatever. Every game counts the same. You went 13-3, then you've gone 3-6. Well, you know what? Follow that up with 10-2. Then that 3-6 doesn't hurt so bad. Go get 10-2 in these 12 games where you're playing 10 against bad teams. Beat up the Mariners in your own park. And the next thing you know, instead of being 13 games over, you're 20 games over. And you feel good about yourself, middle of the month, 20 games over. Because right now, the only teams who are 20 games over, the Bo Sox, the Yankees, that's it. Those are all the teams in Major League Baseball that are 20 games over. And they got to play each other a bunch of times, so they have to beat the hell out of each other. The Astros don't have that. That is an added advantage to the Astros' schedule. They do not have to play either the Yankees or the Red Sox, 19 times or whatnot. So this is a chance for them to get fat, have some fun, feel good. Going to play in, you know, Texas is a great hitter's park. Kansas City is a great hitter's park. So you're going to get a chance to, you know, rack up some offense here. But going into this 12-game stretch, at some point they've got to make a decision on what the order in their bullpen is going to be, and then they have to stick to it. All right, if Giles is your closer, stop wasting him when it's not a save situation. Because it doesn't make any sense. You know, if you bring Giles in and it's a tie game and you need him to give you an inning, maybe you need him to give you more than an inning. You can almost understand that. But there's no need to bring him in when you're up 5. There's no need to bring him in when you're up 4. You've got 8 guys in the bullpen. Find another angle. Because bringing him in up 5 and bringing him up 4 meant when you needed him, when you were up 2, you didn't have him. And I think it's fair for any Astros fan to be upset with the way the bullpen has been used. You know, and during this 9-game stretch where they've lost 6-9, okay, the culprits in the pen are not Tony Sipp. They're not Joe Smith. Okay, the culprits in the pen are Will Harris, Devinsky, Peacock, and Giles. They're the culprits in the pen. Maybe they haven't been necessarily used right. Like I said, Devo got used 3 games in a row, and it was the 3rd game that he gave up his 2 runs. Otherwise, Devo was clean. Will Harris has been awful. Peacock was brought in 2 different games. 1 in the 9th, 1 in the 10th. It didn't work so well. Giles actually got a save in his 1 save appearance. Giles is never going to be automatic 1-2-3, line him up, sit him down. But he's still the best guy you got. So either you're going to feed his confidence and you're going to use him the right way and you're going to maximize what he can give you, or you're going to keep up with this BS and you're going to get games like, you know, where he comes in with a 5-run lead and he puts 3 guys on and they yank him and then you go to other guys and then they let everybody score. You know, you got to decide how are you really going to treat Giles? Are you going to treat him like a real closer, or are you going to treat him like, well, he's kind of our closer, but we'll just throw him in there every now and then just for S&Gs because, well, you know, that's what we're going to do. Because that second option never works. And I mean never works. So let's just understand that right away. So it turns out one of the big four in Golden State is not necessarily down with the big discount. It's next.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Pat trading in for Fred and A.J. on the Blitz. ESPN 97.5. John Lee on the other side of the glass on the ones, twos, and threes. You find us on Twitter at pcreighton1, at ESPN 97.5, at John Snow, Snow with a zero, here on ESPN 97.5. And, you know, there was a story came out last week that probably put blood in the eyes and ears of every fan of every team not in Golden State. So if you're not in the Oakland area, this probably made you want to stab your eyes out. And that was the idea that Klay Thompson would give up $86 million just to stay in Golden State. Now, the idea that Klay wants to stay in Golden State, well, that's not that big a deal. We know he wants to stay in Golden State. But the fact that he would take the extension a year early, which would give massive, not only salary relief to Golden State, but tax ramification relief to Golden State by passing up on $86 million. It's like, you've got to be kidding me, right? It's like, so first they get four stars who all want to play together. And now everybody's going to take mega discounts? Because that's not how it works for every other team. You know, Klay Thompson, whose father is Michael Thompson, former Laker. You know, Michael Thompson was asked about what might happen with his son on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And here's what Michael Thompson had to say about his son, Klay, and possible extension talks going forward.
Have negotiations, Michael, begun in any way that you know of?
Klay definitely wants to play his whole career in Golden State and the Bay Area. No question about that. He loves it up there. He loves playing for the organization. Loves the fans. But let's just say that negotiations probably will continue in the summer of 19.
All right. Michael Thompson, negotiations in the summer of 19? Sounds pretty good. That means Clay's going to be here for a while, I think. I appreciate you.
Yeah, if it's up to Klay, he's there. So it's up to the Warriors if they want him or not.
So if it's up to Klay, you heard his father say he wants to stay in the Bay Area. Okay, I don't think that's a surprise. But by not signing the contract this offseason, by going into next offseason when his contract actually expires and he becomes a free agent, he goes from $102 million to $188 million. And look, it doesn't force the Warriors to have to give guys up because the way the cap works, you can continue to sign your own guys to, you know, more and more money as long as you're willing to pay the massive tax bill that's going to come with it. Fortunately for Warriors fans, their owners are rich and they can continue to pay that. Also, Warriors fans pay the highest average ticket price in the NBA by a significant margin. Average regular season ticket price for the Warriors this year was $240. To give you an idea of how that compares to Houston, Houston's average ticket price for the regular season for this year was $88. That's almost triple. $88 to $240. That's the difference in price for Toyota Center and Oracle. So the next time somebody says to you, oh, well, Rockets tickets cost too much and that's why we can't go. Well, obviously San Francisco doesn't have an issue with that. And I'd be willing to say there's plenty of money here in Houston. Just, you know, that's not a reach. But it is interesting that all the talk about Thompson taking that big discount. Well, here's his dad just put the kibosh on that. That's good news for every other team, because now the Warriors, you know, if they have to wait until next year to re-sign Klay, they have to start making hard decisions about luxury tax. Because that $240 million payroll will come with another $100 million of tax. It becomes a $340 million payroll. Ticket prices are going to go up. Concessions are going to go up. Jersey sales are going to go up. The price on everything is going up. Price to park going up. Because you can't, it's hard to maintain that level of cost without continuing to pass it on, because you know they don't want to cut into their profit margin. No, all these costs are going to get passed on. You know, and that's something that I know a lot of Rockets fans are looking at is, you know, how much of a cost factor is going to get passed on if this team's going to go into hard luxury tax to put together a top team. There's a story that's out on the big lead on USA Today about how Bobby Marks, who's a former assistant GM in Brooklyn, was talking about how it'd be almost impossible for the Rockets to get LeBron James. Now, number one, let's remember this is the same guy who put the Nets in the predicament that they were in by giving away like five drafts worth of picks for declining Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Aside from that, he talks about how the only way LeBron would ever want to go to Houston or would even be able to go to Houston would be if he kind of did the same thing Chris Paul did, which is opt into his current deal and then force his trade through. And that's something that, you know, I've talked about for a long time now. And yes, there are issues with the Rockets not having a first-round pick this year. It comes down to what is the Cavs' ultimate goal? How much does Dan Gilbert really hate paying luxury tax? How much does Dan Gilbert, you know, prefer to have a bad team that makes money versus having a really good team that he claims, because you listen, with creative accounting, you can make any claim you want, but he claims he's losing $25 million a year on the Cavaliers. I call massive shenanigans on that because the NBA is making more money than ever. So to say the NBA makes more money than ever and a team going to the finals is losing money, no. But Dan Gilbert's his team. If he wants to just be a complete cash whore and say, I want to make the absolute most money I can, and in his mind, he thinks he makes more money by having a bad team than by having a good team, well, can't force him to sell. And yeah, you know what? The Rockets would have to completely change their roster in order to fit that. You know, would Cleveland want to take back some of the players, some of the money? They don't have to take all of it back, because while the Cavs are $38 million over, the Rockets, well, $21 million under. So it doesn't have to be a dollar-for-dollar match. But that being said, the Rockets would have to be able to move guys. Cleveland would have to accept those guys. And do they want to do that? Or does Cleveland just want to rip it apart, strip it down, let LeBron walk, move Kevin Love, try to move everybody else they can, and go bare bones, strip down, rebuild? You know, which is it going to be? Until they make that decision, the Rockets will never be able to know. But we'll get into that a little bit more. In fact, you know what? We can get into the Rockets and the NBA Finals on the other side as we hit hour two on the Blitz. None of the above. Get cut the cord. Lights out. Cooler than me.
97.5.